Yeah, I'm ready.
Well, hi. Hi, everyone.
Hey.
And welcome to the Nerdy of North podcast. It's a nerdy podcast hosted by Northern Nerds. I am one of your hosts, Sam. And today, I am not with Paul, which is really sad, but I am joined by the other half of the Top Grumps, that really great web series that's on YouTube, on the Nerdy of North YouTube. It's Chris.
Hey, all right.
All right. That's what I wanted.
All
I just
right.
wanted you to say, all right.
All right. How's
All
it going?
right. I'm all right, you?
I'm excited being on a podcast and that.
Oh, no. Must be really fun for
Not
you.
a web series.
I know. Different. Different stage. Different outputs. Be
Yeah.
really fun. Really fun for you.
This
Yes.
is what it's like at the top, kid.
Chris has been influenced by classic film noirs today. So be expected to hear some changes in his voice.
I've got loads of quotes written down as well.
Oh, have you?
Well,
Oh,
some
well.
of them, which I found weird.
Well, you're joining us today because we are in our classy part of the Nerdy Up North month. We're going all classy. Look at us being all black and white and classy. Looks good, doesn't it? Chris is really intrigued by the fact that everything that he has that is green is now red. Do you want to show the people your lighter?
I'll not put a lighter on. That's green.
See,
What
his
else?
signs in the background are green. Yeah. Chris has
No
been
copy.
absolutely fascinated for the past 10 minutes just finding stuff that he can turn from green to red. But yeah. Hi everyone, welcome. It's Sunday, and thanks for everyone in the chat. Hi everyone.
Still got Lee's comment.
I'm just not even bothering. I can't host and take in Lee at the same time. So today is my choice of classy movies. We're doing I can't remember the year, 1941's The Maltese Falcon. So.
Hey.
Hey, so I will do the disclaimer and then we're going to crack on open the Maltese Falcon because I am so intrigued to hear Chris's opinions on his first ever classic Hollywood movie. First ever. So, everything discussed in today's episode is our opinions and our opinions alone. If you'd like to discuss anything from today's episode, please come and join us on the Facebook group. You can join us in the Nerdy Up North Discord or the comment section where we can have an open discussion. But what we won't have is anyone coming for us and telling us our opinions are wrong, because we can all agree to disagree in fandom. So let's keep it fun, keep it kind, and keep the toxic behaviour out of her nerdism.
Don't be a phallus.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that.
Didn't want to rip off Dan completely.
Yeah, don't confuse us, because I'll not remember where I am. I'll stop just going into Monster Land and yeah, I'll completely lose this podcast altogether. Right, The Maltese Falcon. So I do have the taglines for this movie. Just like any other classic movie that we've done, these really are coming from posters and newspapers and, not the classic like taglines we would get today. So the first one, it's thrilling. It's chilling. It's the most baffling mystery story in years. Is it? It wasn't. Another great story from the author of The Thin Man.
Not Casper then, is it?
Oh gosh. Killer Bogard, a guy without a conscience. Mary Astor, a dame without a heart. That was printed in the Berkeley Daily Gazette in California on the 21st of January 1942. Humphrey Bogart, the most ruthless lover you'll ever meet. Mary Astor, the most exciting woman he ever met. That was in the Saskatoon Star Phoenix, which is in Canada, on the 7th of April 1942.
Oh, the Saskatoon Star Phoenix. I get that
Yeah.
all the time, yeah. I'm on the news that.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Humphrey Bogart takes both guns and gals in stride till he meets Mary Astor, a kind of menace Bogart never met before. Detroit got a kind of good, like taking the both guns. That was a good call. That was Detroit, Michigan, the 6th of November, 1941. A story as explosive as his blazing automatics.
What?
Does automatics come in? I was
I
so
don't know.
confused by that. He's as fast on the draw as he is in the drawing room. The last one.
Nah.
The last one. He's a killer when he hates. He doesn't
What's that?
kill anyone.
I know, what's this got to do with the Falcon?
Nothing. That's weird because he doesn't kill anyone. Someone is
The death.
killed.
Oh yeah, I love that scene as well.
So, is your first, it was my first viewing too, but your first viewing of not just this, but of a classic Hollywood movie. What did you think?
Right, I liked it. It took a bit to get used to the talking in it, like the speech patterns, because I don't think any of them take breaths in between words
No.
or like pauses. I noticed there was a couple of weird cuts which I never normally notice, like Humphrey will be sitting on a table and then the next scene he'll be getting up on the table like they're the wrong order,
Yeah.
but I can forgive that a little bit. But yeah, I liked it, enjoyed it. I'm glad I watched it now.
I'm shocked, man, because with Paul not joining us tonight, I actually give you the option to do something else. And I was quite taken aback that you wanted to actually watch it. Because
Oh yeah.
it's not a name that is quite common amongst classic Hollywood if you don't know your classic Hollywood films. But this is my first, it was my first time watching it, and my first time watching a Humphrey Bogart film as well, which really threw me because I, again, like Chris said, I didn't realize how fast he could talk. He was
Yeah.
so quick. And it took a while for
Eminem.
me ears, really, yeah. He could spit some rhymes. It was just, it took us a while for me ears to kind of adjust to it. But once it did, and I was fine-tuned into him, like it was, you didn't want him to leave the screen. And he, to be fair, he barely didn't. He was in it, I'd say 99% of the movie.
Yeah.
It was directed by John Huston. This is John Huston's first ever film. And obviously, he would go on to direct five more with Humphrey Bogart and oh, Peter Lorre as well. But the with John, kind of, he didn't use his name because John comes from the John Huston, the father of Angelica Huston and Danny Huston. He didn't quite use his name, but his father, who actually is in this movie.
Right.
Who's a very famous actor in his own right. I'm trying to find out where he is. Sorry. He was the district attorney. He's only in it for a few seconds. Blink and you will miss him. John Hamilton. Was it John Hamilton? No, sorry. Me, God, no. Walter Huston. Sorry. He was Captain Jacoby.
Right.
That's why I got confused with the district attorney because he's only in it for a few seconds. He's the patriarchy of the four generations of the Huston Acton family, which obviously includes Angelica and Danny and John, who's the director. It was him and his name who kind of got this film greenlit.
Netball film.
Pretty much, yeah, but it was he kind of. He knew what he was doing. He put his name out there. He put it to the studio that this was going to be his film with his son and he would be acting in it a lot, like, and he didn't. He took a step back. He's not even credited. He
Right.
just, once his son got the foot in the door, he then just took a step back and just let him do it. But he did kind of use his name to gain favor with the studio. But hey, John Huston is a talent. He's gone on to done some absolutely amazing films. So, and he works hard. I can understand nepotism to a degree, but if you're gonna work for it, like there's some hard work and nepo babies out there.
I think I'm one of them.
Yeah, you are a nepo baby yourself.
Well, moderately hard working nipple baby.
I do have a bit more on the production of this. This is quite a straightforward production. A lot of laughs, a lot of practical jokes between the cast and crew,
Right.
because these are all friends. So
Is this
there's
like a 2025 practical jokes where you'll go rah from around the corner, or like 1940s practical jokes where, oh, I'll put a bit of cyanide in your tab or something?
cyanide. Do you think
Or
that's what it
something that
did?
explodes,
Do you
dynamite even.
think I'm trying to find it because I had like a whole thing, but yeah, they did a lot of practical jokes between each other. John Huston being the instigator of quite a lot of them. Oh, that was it. Humphrey Bogart and his wardrobe, all his clothes,
Right.
all his own clothes, and it was actually common practice that that Warner Brothers liked actors to use their own clothes because it kind of saved money on the budget.
Yeah.
So all them fantastic suits that you see Humphrey walking in are all his own. There was also, I'm just spitting out facts here.
I wonder if that's why Cairo was so like angry, do you know, when he pops him first and his nose, his like mouth starts bleeding. He's like, oh, you messed up my suit when he wakes up.
Okay, Cairo getting hit in the face. Where exactly did she hit him? Did she get him with a shoe? Is that why he had like a
Oh
massive
no,
mark on the top of
it's,
his head?
do you know, in the first part where he first meets Cairo, he goes into the office and he's just like, oh, I'll give you 10 grand if you find this eagle. And then he's just like, I'll search your office too, and pulls out the tiniest gun, and then he's
It's
just like
so silly.
kapow and just hits him
That
and
scene
knocks
is
him.
probably the funniest scene in the whole film. And it's just how great Peter Law actually is. As I always thought of him as like a more of a serious, but he's very comedic, like without even trying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
Should we tell people the plot of this? Because they might be very confused by the whole Maltese Falcon.
Oh yeah. Maltese, isn't
Yeah, exactly. Before I start like getting into more of me facts, maybe it might be an idea to tell people the plot of this because it's very straight. It's not what I thought. I didn't think it had anything to do with the statue of a falcon.
Maltese
So
one?
yeah, so Sam Spade, who is Humphrey Bogart, gets a visit by a woman who wants, right, she wants them to find her sister's boyfriend. This is what she initially tells them, to find her sister's boyfriend, to then rough him up a bit because she wants to then get her sister away from said boyfriend.
Yeah.
And Sam Spade, again, who's Humphrey Bogart, his partner, Miles Archer, is taking a bit of a fancying to this lady. Who calls herself Ruth Wanderley, and he's like, yeah, I'll take it. Miles gets killed, and off screen, so does the sister's boyfriend, who was called Floyd Thursby.
It's a horrible name as well to say.
Thursby.
Floyd Thursby. It's like a
Thursby. Yeah,
mouthful, isn't
it is.
it? The
Sam then finds out that Ruth Wanderley is not Ruth Wanderley, she's actually Bridget O'Shaughnessy, who, and this is where it gets really confusing, who wanted to have Floyd taken out because why? I can't remember. Why did she want Floyd taken out?
Isn't it because he was a dangerous man or something?
Something like
And
that. It was something silly, like. And quite forgettable because then all of a sudden you'd be introduced to Cairo, who's played by Peter Law, who
yeah.
then's like on about this statue that he wants him to retrieve. And Bridget's got something to do with it.
Yeah.
So this statue is something that is, it's like a holy grail of collector items. And it's worth millions.
It is a real thing as well.
Yeah. I didn't go into too much detail as to like about the actual statue itself.
Well, when I googled into it, do you know the opening screen where it tells you, and it's like, in 1539, the Knights Templars of Malta, It just came up with that, so I'm just going to assume without digging further that that's true.
I agree. It's actually in the Wikipedia for this movie as well. It's like it's carved out so you can read it. There's something to do with Charles V of Spain, and yeah, this statue was like worth loads, and Cairo wants Sam to get it, but that scene when he kind of like says, "I'll give you this amount of money to go and get this statue," and then Sam knocks him out, takes his gun. They have like a proper like friendly chat, and
Yeah.
then he does it again with the gun. He's like, "Can I have my gun, please?" And then he goes, and then he just puts it back up again.
I just like that with Humphrey's just like, oh shit, I should have seen this coming and starts laughing. It's like you've got a gun on you.
Oh, Humphrey Bogart's not scared of anything in this movie at all. Especially the guy
Yeah.
who keeps following him.
Oh, and Wilma.
Wilma? Oh, poor Wilma.
Wilma.
Wilma started crying.
I
Yeah, it
know that
was his
surprised
Wilma.
me. I was like, this is the 40s where like people are meant to be like
Hard.
toxically masculine. And
Yeah.
you look, there's a camera shot of him going, and there's
No,
just two tears coming down.
oh, so sad. Yeah, so Sam sent on this like wild goose chase of trying to get this statue, which he eventually does get his hands on. And this is before he is met the fat man, who again is after, who works with Cairo, who's after it, and it turns out that it's all a fake.
Yeah, oh, that scene because like the basically one of his I can't remember who it was went to Humphrey's office with this it looked like a pack of meat or something wrapped in newspaper,
Yeah.
dumps it on the table and then he sends it to a safe place and then he goes to meet the fat man and that, but when he's opening it he scrapes it with a knife to check
Yeah.
because it's meant to be covered in lacquer and this bird thing is meant to be encrusted with all these rare diamonds and
Yeah.
gems. That's what makes it valuable. And he's like, oh, it's been coated in like that for shipping purposes. And he
Yeah.
starts scratching it. And he's just like, it's a weird scene where you see him going with a knife. And then the next he's just like, it's fake. We shouldn't be sad about it.
Let's just go to Istanbul.
Yeah.
It's such a shift in the way that the fat man, what's his name, Gutman,
Where is he? I've
Casper
got all the
Gutman,
characters here. Caspar Gutman.
who is commonly known as the fat man.
Yeah.
He that tickled my funny bone when I heard when I found out what his real name was. I was like, Gutman, really? So that really is the. It's such a topsy-turvy movie because you initially start out with the with what's her face,
Bridget.
Mary. No, Ruth, who initially comes in wanting one thing, and
Oh,
then
yeah.
out of that, Sam's partner, who he got over very quickly. Did you see how
Yeah.
fast he took Miles's name off the detective agency?
Yes. I thought it's 1941 or two or something, isn't it? It's like World War Two times, isn't it? 44 was the end. So I don't know if they're just like. It's drilled into them. Oh yeah, people die, just move on kind of thing. That wartime like mentality. Or if it's just like, I can't be asked to act this grievance scene, I'll just skip it.
Yeah, he was so quick to get over that his partner, Miles, oh yeah, we totally forgot about the fact that Miles's wife, or soon to
Oh.
be wife, was having an affair with Sam, and Sam wanted to be with him, but he wouldn't because of Maya. It was such like a little love triangle, but she kept grassing him into everyone because they were trying to pin the murder of Miles and Floyd Thursby onto Sam, and it was Miles's girlfriend who kept doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this film any justice, really, am I? Like, because it's all, it really is like, it is, it's so fast paced. It's an hour and
Yeah.
40 minutes long, and they get in at least one, two, three stories in there. You've got the Miles Archer story, you've got the Bridget O'Shaughnessy one, you've got Cairo, you've got Gutman, you've got Wilma.
I liked the Wilma and Daddy Caspar. What's he called? Gutman. Casper Gutman? Yeah, the
Casper,
Wilma and Daddy Gutman betrayal scene.
when they want to use Wilmer as a fall guy, because that's why he
Yeah.
starts crying.
He's like, I couldn't. He's like a son to me. He knocks him out. He's like, okay, you can have him.
You can have him. Yeah, he it didn't take very long to ha be convinced, but it doesn't take him very long after he finds out that the Falcon is fake. After all of that, bearing in mind, Gutman was about to put out a lot of money to get this statue, yet didn't hand a penny over. So maybe that's why he wasn't so bothered when he found out it was fake, because he's like, I've still got my money, and still go to Istanbul and go and find it. And him and Cairo just run off into the sunset. But then Sam is very quick to be like, they've ran off, but you, Bridget, you
Oh,
killed Miles and Floyd.
I love that part because I was like, oh, are they going to run off into the sunset at the end? And he's
Yeah.
like, ah, oh, it'd be a shame if they hung you. You've got a pretty little neck.
And he's like, I'll wait for you, or maybe I won't, but maybe I will wait for you. He doesn't give her a definite answer at all.
No, I know. Which I kick out of the curb. I don't like Bridget, even.
No. Mary Astor was just as crazy as her. I don't think Bridget wasn't that crazy. She was playing a game that she literally hadn't. There was no reason for her to be in it. Like, none at all. She
Yeah,
was
because
part of. She.
it would have gotten to the same point in the storyline at the end, wouldn't
Exactly,
it?
exactly. Like Floyd Thursby, the reason why he's been brought into it is because he had the Falcon. He is the last known person to either have seen it, and Floyd was her boyfriend. You don't really need her for any of this. She didn't know where it was. It was Sam who found it.
Is it not? Does Sam need a love interest? Is that why she's in?
Maybe. Well, Mary Astor's off-screen notoriety was instrumental in her casting. She had been in several scandals concerning affairs she had been involved in during her marriage. When she first came to Hollywood, she had an affair with a much older John Barrymore, who is the patriarch of the Barrymore family, who is part of, Drew Barrymore.
I thought you were going to say, my instant thought was Michael Barrymore,
Michael
but
Barrymore,
anyways.
no, not quite. Her husband had been killed in a plane crash, and she'd been married multiple times, which was considered scandalous behavior in those times. She was also an alcoholic. During a bit of custody hearing, a diary she kept recounting her various sexual exploits was made public. Her former secretary had stole it and give it to her soon to be former husband, Franklin Thorpe, whose attorney leaked copies of cherry-picked passages basically to make her look terrible. Yeah,
I kind of want to
this
read that.
do you know this is why old Hollywood fascinates the life out of me, because the scandals are really scandalous.
Yeah.
Like, they are juicy as anything. So yeah, and for the times anyway, like nowadays anyone would bat an eyelid if someone had posted sexual exploits online. You'd probably get done for it, like, but
I don't know. Like, didn't Kim Kardashian get famous because of a sex tape?
that her mother distributed, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just an advert now, isn't
Pretty much, yeah. It's just a point of publicity.
And like Paul's OnlyFans, which he's just started.
Oh. It's good to know. He's not here to defend himself, so yeah. The most interesting character for me, and I don't know if you'll agree, was Humphrey Bogart.
Right.
Bogey, as he was
Why?
known to his friends. Why? Why
Yeah,
was
I
he
mean,
interesting?
I've got a different character for a different reason. I was just wondering why Humphrey's your favorite.
I just think it's his quick wit and he's quick thinking. Like when Wilma's walking down the corridor with them, he's so quick to like literally put his hands in Wilma's pockets, take his guns, and kind of like put his like make Wilma put his hands over his head. He's just he was and he did that quite a few times. Very and he also pointed out at the beginning of the movie he doesn't use guns himself. He doesn't agree with them. But he was so quick to get everyone's guns out of their hands. I just thought he was very quick. Obviously, his fast talking helped as well. And I don't know. I feel like he knew exactly what was going on from the very beginning. I don't. There's something about that end speech that makes me think he had her clocked right from the start.
To
And
be
he's
fair,
just gone along it.
I didn't trust her as soon as I saw her. I was like, you've lied to us a few times, though. Not me, but Humphrey. War Humps.
Wumps. Bogey, as he was called.
Oh, bogey. Do you know what my favourite line about that is?
Mm.
Do you know when, was it, Bridget starts talking about her real identity and stuff like that, and when it's when she all when she comes clear and she tells them that she's been lying, and they're like, we didn't believe you, but we'll believe the $200 he gave me.
It was when he also when he was trying to get out of her the truth, and she just kept going, "Oh, and that's a lie," and and yeah, that's a lie too. Like, there's n I didn't believe a word that woman was saying.
I mean, it's probably good as an actress, but I hated the character.
Yeah,
And then it was
I
like,
mean, she
oh, the
did her
questions
job.
are getting too hard. Oh,
Oh
off.
no! Oh, I don't feel too well. Please, let's stop. Stop. Yeah, she was pathetic. So who was yours? Who's your favorite character?
Oh, right, Caspar Gutman. I think he's right. He's the right kind of like dick.
Yeah.
Because he's paid he paid Sam 10 grand to fight. They'd agreed on it, and he'd undercut him a bit. And he had this envelope full of cash. It was $1,000 bills, was it?
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Something
So
like that.
he says, oh, I want to do business properly. And he gives Sam the envelope and just says, there's actually nine here, trying to put a bit of a wedge in between him and Bridget. And then he looks at Bridget, and obviously figures him out. And he's just like, you've just palmed that $1,000, haven't you? And he's just like, I'll never tell. And then gives up straight away. And he's like, it was just a joke to see what you'd do. I just love that little hee-hee character.
It's when he drugs Sam
Oh, yes.
and he's sitting in this he's sitting in this like lavish silk like dressing gown, which is beautiful by the way. And then all of a sudden, once Sam's like passed out, it just takes it's how he takes it. He's so like grand, like takes his dressing gown off, dumps it, and then has this full-on suit on underneath, and it's like, let's go, boys.
I've noticed in this film. Oh, by the way, just about that scene where he does get drunk, Wilma gets a proper sly little boot in Sam's face.
Did you see how he kicked him?
It looked real, because I was
Yeah,
just like, it's. Is he like nicked his food at the bait line or something? He was
he
like proper
probably
going for it.
Sam really did deserve that kick though, but that felt like that really felt like I mean, look at the to he really tortured Wilma like the minute he met him. It's like he had no he was completely like no patience with him whatsoever, but he was just ripping the piss out of him from the second he met him. Oh, Wilma. He didn't stand a chance.
Nah, he just couldn't keep up. He was the definition of like a goon, wasn't he?
Yeah, but a really bad one.
Yeah,
He
with
got
his
his
little
guns taken.
newspaper.
Oh, her and doesn't he like just sit down next to him when he first meets Wilma with a newspaper and just starts reading next to him? And it's like, isn't that the person you're meant to be watching? He's literally just sat down next to you. Like, how bad are you at your job?
And when he looks out the window, he's just standing there staring up at his window like that. Obviously, like there's been nothing happening out the window, so he's just sat there for hours, stood there staring at this closed window.
That shot was brilliant though, when Humphrey went to go and kiss Bridget and he just turns his head and looks directly out the window at Wilma on the other side of the road. Oh, some fantastic shots in this mind. John Huston really knows how to put a film together. Did you get a good copy of this? Because I had to keep changing links, and one would be grainy, one would be clear.
No, it was quite good. Like, it was really clear. I think I got the because I'd sent you a trailer because Warner Brothers did a remastered one.
Yeah, that's
And
probably what I ended up watching in the end.
I think I watched that one, but I also had to use multiple links.
Yeah, it just kept cutting out all the time. I went on a into a massive rabbit hole with Humphrey Bogart after this. The man has a very interesting life. He was born on December 25th, 1899, and he died January 14, 1957. And in that, my God, he lived a life. He was married four times. His parents were he comes from money.
Right.
So his dad was a surgical doctor, and his mom was a very famous illustrator. And one of her illustrations was of a it was for a baby, what do you call it, like advertisement, and it was a baby Humphrey, and
Right.
it was just advertising this baby company, and she made more money than her husband did in 2 years of hit just on the back of that picture, and it set them up for life. But he didn't have a great relationship with his parents. They were very like formal. Like, he didn't call his mom mom, he called her by her real name, because she didn't particularly like it. He had two sisters. He ended up going off to they just shooed him off to boarding school in the end. But he was married four times. First two wives, get married very quickly, divorce incredibly quicker. His second wife he remained good friends with. They were together for about 10 years. It was an amicable split. There was no ill feelings. She was a stage actress,
Right.
which is where Humphrey Bogart started. He started on the stage. He was actually doing stage work while he was doing this film as well.
Right.
And she didn't want to go into the movie life like he had. So they just amicable split. His third wife, Mio Meta, Metho, Methot. That's her surname.
Method.
Metho.
Where's she from? What nationality is she?
I didn't actually look into that part, but Mio, as I will call her. Wow. That was an explosive marriage of abuse, alcoholism, paranoid schizophrenia, all on her side. He suffered massively, during that. His alcoholism got even worse. He was always a heavy smoker. He was smoking about 80 to 90 a day, because
Jesus.
yeah, the, yeah.
You've rolled your own as well.
Yeah, they were all rollies. He only started smoking filter cigarettes when he got diagnosed with cancer.
How does he have the time?
Did you say it didn't take him very long? You saw how he rolled that. That's actually him rolling in the film. He always smoked in his movies.
I was gonna say I loved the smoking doodads in this film. Like, did you notice the desk lighter as well?
Yes.
That looks amazing. I would have one if obviously I don't smoke in the inside because I do smoke tabs. And his little baccy pouch, which was
Yeah.
a little actual pouch.
Yeah, it was like a drawstring, like a woman's drawstring purse. That's what it looked
Yeah.
like. And it was mesmerizing to watch him like roll. And when his secretary did it for him,
Yeah.
it was like a joint effort of but it was so effortless between the two of them that you could tell they'd done this many times before. He had it in his hand, she was making it, then he rolled it, then she lit it, and it was seamless. But yeah, he didn't start smoking filtered cigarettes until he got diagnosed with cancer. And which is his marriage to Mayo was I don't want to say the reason, but it really did drive him into the arms of his fourth wife, who was quite literally, I would dare say, the love of his life, which is the amazing Lauren Bacall. He met her when she was 19, he was 45. They were together until he died. He had his first kid at the age of 49 with Lauren.
Five
And then
foot nine, she's
he's.
24.
Yeah.
Just waiting out ages here. If I
Yeah.
should be like, oh,
And
that's
then
nice.
And then he had his second one with Lauren at the age of 52. So he became a father in that marriage. Him and Lauren were, the way Lauren describes him, I've watched a lot of interviews with her over the weekend, and she just said he's honest and he hated people who were like very pomp and snotty, and he didn't like pretentiousness, and he became quite liberal, which was against his family, who were very they were Republicans, even though his mum was a massive feminist.
Right.
He just kind of went against the grain, and he didn't stand for bullshit, but he also wasn't an asshole. She just describes him in such a lovely manner. He is buried in, he's not buried actually, he was cremated, and he's in Forest Lawn Memorial Park, but he actually is in his own little garden. Like, there's other people in there, but this garden is so exclusive that only the family members have keys to go in to visit him.
Right.
It's beautiful. Many a YouTuber has managed to get a hold of that key and go inside. There was rumors that Lauren was actually interred with him in his little niche that he's in, but
All
she's
right.
not. She put in an interview that when they were putting his ashes into the niche, the guy turned around and said, "There's room in there for you too, Miss Bacall." And she was like, "There's no goddamn way I am going in there." Sean, you can chuck me to sea, but I am not going in that thing. And he was buried, he was put into his niche with a gold whistle.
No, what, why?
It's in reference to the, because him and Lauren Bacall did a lot of films together. Their chemistry was crazy, so the studios kind of went with that and had them in a lot of, in one of the films she says a very famous line, and I'm probably going to end up butchering it, but it's something along the lines of, if you need me, you just need to whistle. You pucker your lips and blow. You know how to whistle, don't you?" And that's why he was
I've
buried with a
heard that
whistle.
before.
Yeah, I've butchered it, but it's the way she says, "And you just puck up and blow,"
It sounds
with
like a
Lauren
Kesha song or something. Blow.
Bacall. It's just Lauren Bacall's very. She had such a gravelly voice. Even at 19, she's amazing. She's absolutely beautiful as well. But yeah, he went on and he's done some classic movies, Casablanca. He was very typecast as a villain in the start of his career. It wasn't until Maltese Falcon when he was starting to be took serious as someone who could do something outside of the villain casting. But he was a stage actor. It took him a long time, and not because he Hollywood was too far out of reach for him. He just really loved being on the stage. Which a lot of
Is it?
actors were the same. Vincent Price was exactly the same.
Do you know with do you think a lot of the people in this film were stage actors went on to be in film? Because I'm just thinking about the over the top reactions to things. Because stage actors do that so you can see it from the cheap seats, can't you? Don't they? And I'm just thinking, going back to oh, what's he called? Sam's partner's death when he gets shot and tumbles down like for half an hour.
It's that is such a classic game. It always reminds me of Hitchcock. When I was younger, when I first got into Alfred Hitchcock movies, I went to an experience in Universal Studios. They used to have like a studio thing lot set up, and it was like the Alfred Hitchcock experience, and get to see how he makes these movies. And one of them is the falling down off buildings. And that shot of them where the on their back and their arms are flailing up in the air, and it's done on a seat, and they are literally just on a green screen as they are, falling back. And that literally took me right there as to that shot. Sorry, I've got an itchy foot.
Sorry. I
It took
know
me
that
back
that
to that
explains it
shot.
though. That
And the
explains the oh, sorry,
No, go on, go on.
I was just gonna say that that explains the some of the stage direction and stuff with it with the these kind of films. Obviously, it's the first time I was watching, but I was wanting to know if that's typical of other films at this time.
It's very exaggerated, really over the top. And the likelihood is the majority have come from stage. Like I said, Vincent Price, he is very, the way he pronounces his words and the way that he pronounces things, it's like he is talking to the back of the room. And that's been on the stage quite a lot. And Humphrey was no different. I think what really helped Humphrey Bogart is how quick he is. His dialogue is incredibly quick, and he doesn't just know his lines, he knows everybody else's. He's very good at doing that. And he was a very talented chess player as well. He was almost pro.
Is he?
Yeah. In every movie, there is always a chessboard. And it's just there in case he wants to play.
Oh, you mean like on screen as well?
Yeah. He loved chess so much, he actually used to play a long distance chess with somebody who he would write to. And they would literally like write a move and then send it to them, and then it was a long distance chess game. But it got intercepted during World War II. Was it World War II or World War I? Because he was actually in the Navy as well. Was he in the Navy? Did I read that right? If he was, I'm sorry, I've just, but he was doing this, and it got intercepted by the army, who were like, "Oh, has he given away? Is this like coordinates to something?" And he had to justify, like, "No, it generally is a chess game." Yeah, I went on an absolute deep dive with this man because I just found him so interesting. But the other interesting character is Peter Law, or Laurie,
Yes.
depending on how you want to say it. He is, I've not seen him act before. Like, as in, I've never watched any of his movies before, which is odd because he is quite famous as a horror actor. And I've not watched any of his films, but I know of him. I know the voice. I know what kind of
Yes.
voice. That voice is just unreal. I know that there's people who have impersonated him, who try to impersonate him during movies, and the little worm on Corpse Bride, that is in dedication to Peter Law. But he was best friends with Vincent Price, Bela Lugosi. He actually went to go and view Bela Lugosi's body when he died, and he saw him dressed in the Dracula cape and said, "Do you think we should drive a stake through his heart just in case?"
Oh, that's close.
Yeah, he was best friends with Vincent Price. Vincent Price was broken the day Peter Law died, which was March 23rd, 1964. He became really poorly towards the end, to the point where the face that you probably recognize him as is quite puffy, like it's bigger, because he did end up through steroids, put on a bit of weight, and his face changed a lot.
I've noticed his eyes are almost like
Bug.
bulging a bit.
Yeah.
Like a but I just try to say it politely, but yeah,
No, you
buggy.
can't. Buggy. Yeah. He actually convinced Humphrey Bogart to marry Lauren Bacall. Said she's the best thing that'll ever happen to you, especially with that what has gone on with your last marriage. Get out. And he's also the first ever Bond villain from the 1954 Casino Royale.
Oh, I didn't know
Neither did I until I learned about it today.
that. I don't think I've seen the original Casino Royale though. See, I've just stayed away from old films for some reason.
Well, oh gosh, hang on. About 1977, his daughter Catherine Law was almost abducted in Los Angeles by serial killers. Oh my God, this is so interesting. So his daughter was almost kidnapped by serial killers known as the Hillside Stranglers. She was stopped by Kenneth Bianchi and Angelo Buono, who was impersonating policemen. When they realized it was Laura's daughter, they let her go because they genuinely thought her dad was the serial killer Fritz Lang from the movie M. And he did. He played Fritz Lang and M. So and she didn't realize who the killers were until they were arrested, and she had to go to the police and like, oh shit, yeah, they tried to abduct me, but they generally were that stupid and thought my dad was a real serial killer in a movie.
I've definitely just put the Hillside Stranglers in Google and look up this rabbit hole.
That was crazy. But on the back of his performance in M, he received 310 film offers of a similar role, but he refused them because he didn't want to be pigeonholed into playing like a psychopath. But it didn't always work that way because that's kind of the character he kind of ends up going
Yeah.
with. But 310 offers on the back of one movie.
He does play it well, though. The accent, the look goes. That
It
it's
doesn't
just him.
matter, like
It's
in the for someone who is quite small, he makes himself massive.
oh, how small is he?
By I didn't actually look into his height, but another really interesting thing about Peter Law, it was reported that Goebbels warned him to flee Germany. How crazy is
Oh,
that?
seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and he
Joseph.
was a proper wrong'un.
Which one's Goebbels again?
He's the scientist one, isn't he? It
Was
was like
he?
experiments on twins and that.
Oh my God, I've read a book on. Oh, was it him? Is it him? Is it Goebbels who did the experiments in the camps? Because I've got a book that I couldn't finish, and it was from the point of view of his. When the doctors went into the camps, he went up to them and said, "Who knows such and such?" And everyone took a step back, apart from this one guy who didn't, and all the rest of them got taken off, and he ended up being like his apprentice. And he wrote a book of his experience, and I can't remember if it was good, but I couldn't finish it. It was a horrible read.
Yeah, it's not for the light stomach reading about that.
No, you got to be strong of mind as well. He was 5'3", Dave
I'm
Toon. Thank you
taller
so
than him.
much. Why,
I'm
how tall
taller
are
than
you?
Peter Law.
How
I'm
tall?
5'11".
You're 5 what, sorry?
Five ever. No, I'm all right. I've been upgrading an inch, so I'm 5'5" now.
You're
Oh, it isn't.
5'5".
Yeah, don't be surprised.
No,
Yeah.
it's not. It's just because I am vastly taller than you. But if you're not like 5'9", 5'7", I don't know how tall you are. Like, I generally don't know.
No,
I couldn't guess.
I'm 5'4". I think the nurse read me height wrong and gave us an extra number. So I'm just
Did
sticking
you
with that though.
just take it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mum does whenever she gets, because my mum's 4'11", and they'll always say she's 5 foot, and she's like, yep, I'm having that one. She's not, though. She's tiny. Also, Peter Law has another pop culture credit that he can take with him to the grave. He is the original, or his face, his whole him, is the original illustration of Gomez Adams from the Adams Family,
Oh,
which
I
was,
see it.
don't you? The eyes, you know how you mentioned the eyes and that, and the face, like he's, oh yeah, that was it was first published in the New Yorker in 1938, when he was 34 years old. So yeah, Peter Law is the inspiration behind Gomez Adams.
Oh, even because it wasn't Gomez Adams meant to be like a have a strange accent, not like from a particular country. Because I couldn't.
European kind of.
Yeah, like just in general, kind of. Oh, he's European. He's just not from here.
Yeah.
Because I could not place his accent when I get to hear him talking. I had to Google that he's Hungarian.
Hungarian, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know many Hungarian people, but.
Bela Lugosi was Hungarian,
Right.
and you can tell the difference. Like, not tell the difference, but you can kind of like, you could put Bela where he comes from quite easy, and I think that helps because with Dracula, he used that voice and that accent to his benefit, whereas Peter Law, just like, I don't know, it's hard to describe because he plays his accent down.
Hey, it's breathy, isn't it? A bit like
Yeah.
raspy, breathy.
Yes.
Like 80
Yes.
tabs a day breath.
Yes. Yeah, but yeah, it was. It's honestly, it's been an absolute. I want to watch more Pete Law movies. Like, I want to. His Paul Bearers at his funeral was Vincent Price. Oh gosh, I can't remember now. I always remember the Hollywood graveyard where they go to visit his grave. It's spectacular. It's in a, like it's like a vault kind of thing. Like
Right.
it's how do you describe them? They're on the wall and they're in the wall.
The ones that you get in like Mardi Gras thing place where they're
Yeah.
like the mausoleum things.
It's not a
I know it's not that, but it's like
No,
like a
it's not it.
draw.
Have you seen Marilyn Monroe's grave before? Where it's just that you've got the wall of people, but behind the wall is the it's like that, but it's long
Right.
ways. It's not
Right.
that way. Nobody, if the audio is gonna pick up the fact that I'm doing, I don't know the
I'm imagining it like, do you know the autopsy drawers that you get, but on the side?
Yes, that's Marilyn's. But
Hello.
yes, turn it on the side. That's the one that Peter Law's in. Yeah. There's a poll going at the moment in the chat. How tall is Chris? Five,
Oh.
five, five, four, five, three. Only two votes in, and there's more of yous in the chat.
Everyone wins except my self-confidence.
We'll go 5-5. I'll put my vote in. There we go. I'll see everyone 100%. 5-5.
Hey, I voted 5-5
Hey.
there.
Did I find out anything more on anyone else? Because I'm not doing all this research and not telling anyone about it. John Huston recruited Mary Astor to play a prank on his father, Walter Huston. After the elder Huston had filmed his cameo, Astor called up Walter, telling him that she was producer Hal B. Wallace's secretary, and that Wallace thought he'd overacted during his scene. Huston was enraged, declaring that he'd never been accused of overacting in his life, but he agreed to return the next day to reshoot the scene. John then took the phone from Astor, identified himself as Wallace, and repeated the criticism. Walter grew even more furious, declaring that he'd already agreed to reshoot, and it was only when John exploded into laughter on the other end of the phone that Walter realized his son was playing a prank on him. You don't piss off the patriarch. Like, you don't. Also, this is something that I made sure that I wrote down because it was something that I, at the end of the movie, I was very confused how quick they were to go, right, we're going to Istanbul. There was no conversations about it. It was never brought up until the very end. The film does not make things entirely clear as to why, in the end, Constantinople, which is Istanbul, is the group's intended destination. The Falcon had been traced by Gutman to a Russian Cairo dealer there. Rather than trying to steal the bird, Gutman had tried to buy it from him, unintentionally tipping off as it's to extreme value. This is why the fake was created. The Russian then intentionally allowed Cairo, Bridget, and Thursby to steal the fake. At that point, Bridget framed Cairo for the bad checks, putting him temporarily in jail while she and Thursby left for Hong Kong with what they thought was the actual statue.
Ah, that makes it more clear.
That would have been more helpful during the movie. Do you think Sammy stole the Maltese Falcon? Yes. Do you know
She thought it was a
what?
Malteser.
I didn't know what it was. Like, I know of this movie because of the name Humphrey Bogart. That's what I know it from, and it's like it scores 90 up until this year. It scored 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Right,
It's now
so
dropped to 99.
2025's not the year for Maltese Falcons.
No, that it dropped a percentage. It's gotten a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is freaking ridiculous. So yeah, that would have been really interesting. That would have been handy to know that plot point. Because it's so strange when Gutman just goes, right, we're going to Istanbul. All right, bye.
I think it would have added more to his character as well, with the dodgy checks and that he accidentally tipped off the Russian Cairo dealer.
And that Cairo was actually in jail because of Bridget, like it connects all of them perfectly, but there is such a disconnect in the movie that you don't understand what Bridget's got to do with it in the first place, why is she there? But knowing that makes that really helps with the plot now. So I'm glad I knew that part. So contrary to popular belief, it's the stuff that dreams are made of. Spoken by Humphrey Bogart in the last line of the picture. That's quite a famous line for this movie. What they're saying now, what episode would be more classy if we had Lee on? Who is Lee? Yeah, that is known as one of the most famous lines of this movie. It's the stuff that dreams are made of. And apparently it's been hailed as the last line of the picture. It's not. Because the guy he says it to instantly turns around and goes, huh? That's the last line of the movie.
Huh?
Huh?
Do you know what was so disappointing in that? I was like half expecting Humphrey to just smash it and then diamonds and stuff to pop out. And I was thinking, oh
Yes.
yeah, then he's one at the end, something like that. But it was just like
Yeah.
I'll just nip off downstairs then and just, yeah.
Dun, 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 the end. Yeah, I generally thought it was fake in the, but the real thing was like in it. Because when he started scratching it away, I was like, is he going to reveal that this is just a fake casing and it's something underneath? Or, but it
If you were
wasn't.
that invested in it, you would at least crack it in half.
Yeah, of course he would.
Also, did they have X-ray? Like, no, they didn't have security at airports, did they? I'm
No.
just thinking lead is the worst thing you can bring through, the most suspicious thing you can bring through.
Especially in the packaging that it's in.
Yeah, during
Like,
World War II,
yeah.
in
Yeah.
weird burlap sacks and newspaper and.
So you know how when I told you Mary Astor liked having affairs? She had one with John Huston on this film. Oh, she's a card. Absolute card. I'm trying to think if I've got anything else. Oh yeah, so after Warner Brothers saw how successful the film was, they actually decided to produce a sequel. Director John Huston had written a script for the sequel to be titled Three Strangers. The film was supposed to contain many of the primary characters from the film, especially Sam Spade, who I really think they could have made like a full movie series on just that character alone. Before the film reached production, however, Dashiell Hammett informed Warner Brothers that he owned the rights to the characters. That's right. Maltese Falcon is actually a book. Comes from a book. And he owned the rights to the characters. And even though the studio had purchased the rights to the novel, they didn't own the characters. So Three Strangers, which would have been in 1946, was eventually filmed with different characters. Peter Law and Sidney Greenstreet, who is Gutman, appeared in both The Maltese Falcon and The Three Strangers. So there you go. Yeah, I've totally forgot to mention that The Maltese Falcon is based on a book, I think of the same name.
Don't it tells you at the start, but I didn't can't remember.
That is quite clever, though. Like they had Warner Brothers had the right to the novel, so they had the right to tell that story, but they don't have the right to then take them characters and put them into a different story. That's so clever.
Is that like Rings of Power, isn't it? Oh, we can't use
Yeah.
the word Gandalf, we've got to use Little Wizard Man.
Little wizard, well, very tall wizard man. Incredibly tall. At 350, oh, go on.
But they could have changed their names. I mean, Samuel Spade's not exactly Shakespearean name writing.
No, but they really like you could have come up with a deal with the owner of these characters because having a Sam Spade like noir series with Bogart as well playing them like would have been that would have been money.
What are they called? Private Dicks.
Private
Back
Dicks,
then.
yeah.
Private Dicks who doesn't use guns.
Who has a very, my God, the conversations between him and the police. Get
Oh,
your
yes.
boyfriend to take his hands off me.
Oh, do you know what I didn't understand at the end? The two coppers come in, and then one of them looks like he's just had his arse slapped. He's like, oh, and he's like, oh, what's the matter with him?
Oh, is this at
I...
the end when it's revealed that it's Bridget who was the killer all along and he
Yeah.
can't put it on Sam? Yeah, he looks devastated. Like, they probably said to him, just look upset. There's your direction. And that's what he went with.
Oh, he looks like if I've if I'd if I said no to my son when he wants an ice cream out of the freezer. So,
He looked mortified. But the interaction between the police at the beginning, where they are really trying to pin everything onto Sam, is just great. How Sam just like, no, he has respect, but a no shit attitude when it comes to the questioning, because it's he doesn't even talk to the guy who's questioning him. He talks to the other guy, and that line, you get your boyfriend to get your hands off me.
That's what I was going to mention as well. I love the language used in this, like the old timey. Like at one
Yeah.
point, Sam Dewey's secretary or whoever the woman was, just says, "You're a good man, sister," and then walks away.
Yes. Oh, yes. We forgot to completely mention his secretary, who, my God, got some of the greatest names thrown at her throughout the whole film.
HR nightmare today.
Yeah, it really would be. He would be done in an instant. It's the thing is though, when he starts calling her precious and names of that nature, you can really tell the relationship between them is incredibly real. It's sacred, it's real. Like, she probably knows more about him than he knows about himself. And the
She's like his
actress,
caretaker, isn't she?
yeah. The way that she, the handling of everything is ran through her, is just, she's calling the shots, not him. Yeah. Oh, I absolutely loved that. So a £357, 60-year-old British newcomer, Sydney Greenstreet, was so large that the studio had to specially manufacture his entire wardrobe for the role of Casper Gutman. The chair in which Greenstreet sits while talking to Sam Spade in the hotel room was also specially made for him. The chairs and prop department was going to you. Sorry, the chair. Stop laughing at this. I don't know why. The chairs in the prop department was going to you. What they were going to use weren't wide enough to accommodate him, or strong enough to support his weight. I'm sorry, he did not look
Nah.
£357.
No. Oh, did you catch the line that Sam says when he's on the horrible phone thing where he's just like oh he's Casper Gutman. You can't miss him. He's about £300.
He didn't
So
look it though.
he just looked like a that lass in Willy Wonka that got ballooned up like the
Yeah,
blueberry.
Humphrey. Yeah. I'm going to say Humphrey Bogart, but that's who we're talking about. Violet Beauregard.
Oh yes, that one. He just look at her. I mean, today's standards, he's not like massive. I mean, he's
No,
big lad, but
I think tall helps. Tall really helps
yeah.
to hide a lot of weight, and obviously wearing black. You talk about weird edits when they're sitting in Sam's apartment at the end and he's in the chair and Wilma's just about to get it punched and handed over as a fall guy. The cuts in that is so strange, because at one point when Gutman is talking to Sam, he's looking one way and then instantly another way. His positioning in the chair changes quite a lot. That's some choices there. I can see what Lee's saying about us. It's a silly name. Who calls someone Sam? That'll be my parents, Lee. I didn't get to pick this name. I was just given it. And it's not Sam, it's Samantha. What were we gonna say? What was I gonna
Put
say?
that in the nun law.
And then yeah. Lee's
Yeah,
very
I remember seeing a scene where just watching it, because I don't normally see these sort of things, but I was paying attention. Humphrey Bogart was going across the scene and I could just see him staring at the camera as it was
Oh,
happening.
that's so weird, because I don't like fourth wall breaks. The scare is a little bit. I
Yeah.
didn't notice that one.
It was just like a glance where he was just like, he was struggling, and then he just goes,
Oh no,
And he was away.
I don't do fourth walls. But for Humphrey Bogart, the experience of the film was the tops. He later
Hey.
said it was particularly a masterpiece. I don't have many things I'm proud of, but that's one. Bogart so respected John Huston and Sam Spade character that he searched until the end of his life for a script that recaptured the excitement he found in this film. A few years before his death, Bogart revealed that he had purchased a book to adapt into a film for himself and his wife Lauren Bacall, because when they met, they really did work with each other all the time. We might do it, he told a radio interviewer. In association with John Huston, it's a little on the order of the Maltese Falcon. So he was always trying to recapture. And bear in mind, he did Casablanca after this. one of probably, if not the greatest movies of all time. And this is the one he is most proud of. Which Paul being dead, sh who. Sh With, I'm sorry, with Paul being dead, who should replace him? No one, I'll do it by myself. Oh, I'm not picking. The chat can pick that one.
Oh, I pick bigger.
Beggar. But yeah, the I really enjoyed this. Again, it's another movie where I've enjoyed the movie and the background work with it as well. It's been really, like, I've watched so many documentaries on Humphrey Bogart over the
Right.
last 2 days just to get to know him a bit better, because I felt like I didn't know him at all.
I don't know any of these people. Like when you were saying the Casablanca is the most famous film, I know of it. I know about the ending scene where there's the biplane and everything, mainly
Yeah.
from parodies on The Simpsons, but I've never actually seen the film.
Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon for the rest of your life. Yes.
Yeah, that one.
And there's one line that me and my mum always used for each other from Casablanca is, "We'll always have Paris."
Right.
That's from Cas. That's what Humphrey Bogart says in Casablanca. Yeah, it's one of it. If I would dare say, if not one of the biggest films of all time. I mean, I know Gone with the Wind is one of them, but to
Is that the
do
one with
it,
the frog?
the frog.
Yeah.
The frog, no, it's to do with
Yeah.
the and the South will rise again. That's one of the
I'm thinking of a completely different film then.
you really are. It's to do with the Confederacy and the Yankees and Vivian Leigh being batshit crazy throughout the whole thing, and is it Clark Gable who's in it? Yeah, it's like a 4 hour long film. And it almost like bankrupted Hollywood.
Oh yeah, I've heard about
If you watched the Wizard of Oz episode, I explained how the
that.
directors in that had to go and help because it was just a mess. Frankly, I don't give a damn. That's right. That's another line from Casablanca.
I thought that was a line you were going to say. Oh yeah, I see that with my mum all the time.
No. The Paris one, will always have Paris. Yeah, I've really enjoyed getting to get into this, because I love classic Hollywood films, and I'm also doing a little series on the Nerdy Up North website. I'm writing some articles on classic Hollywood scandals.
Hey,
Yay.
I love all other people's tea.
Yeah, and especially like I say, the Hollywood ones are crazy. My first one is on the first ever recorded Hollywood scandal, which was Olive Thomas. The second one is, and if you go down a rabbit hole with this one, I'd be impressed if you get to the end. Is Fatty Arbuckle and the murder of
Is that a
a Jimmy?
nickname, or did someone
Nope,
call
that's
their
his name.
child Fatty?
No, he's called Roscoe Arbuckle. But his nickname in Hollywood was Fatty Arbuckle. And he was a massive silent actor who got caught up in one of the biggest scandals of the 1920s, of the death of Virginia Rappe at one of his house parties. Yeah, that's the second article I'll be writing about, is Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle. It's
I'll have to
crazy.
read them.
Honestly,
I'm d
have a look at
like
him. He's
like
terrifying.
oh, I'm gonna after this.
The
Fatty Arbuckle.
Fatty Arbuckle, Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle. It's one of his silent movies because he was a huge silent star. Like he was making the money. And it's one of them where he literally is. Now imagine silent movies can look quite creepy. He's got this sun behind him with these like baby rosy cheeks. It's terrifying when he's looking in the camera and smiling. Like honestly, horror can't make shit like that.
Oh, is he like one of them, do you know, the old Victorian China dolls?
But terrifying, even more scary, and I don't like them. Yeah. Paul's saying my article's actually going up tomorrow. But it's okay, Paul,
Oh.
whenever. There's absolutely no rush on it, but I've been so excited to be able to write about classic Hollywood scandals. Cause it's either that or I talk about them and nobody's interested in us talking about them. So I might as well write them down. And everyone can read them. But yeah, how did you feel on your first ever classic Hollywood movie?
Right, I've enjoyed it more than I thought I would, and I'm glad I've watched it. I do like the film noir setting now, I think, and I think I'll probably watch some more. So
Really?
cheers, yeah.
Oh, I'm pleased. I'm pleased if that's how if you generally would go out and watch more, because they are some classic like stuff. Like forget the filmmaking side of it, they're just the stories of them. Some
Yeah.
really classic ones. Like Alfred Hitchcock was really good at doing an air thriller.
I mean, I don't want to watch silent films yet. I'll just stick with it. I don't know if I can get into them.
The Phantom of the Opera with Lon Chaney Jr. No, excuse me, Lon Chaney Sr. Is probably one of the greatest silent movies ever made. The makeup, the production, the set, everything to do with that movie is absolutely, for a silent movie, is absolutely breathtaking. But then put it up against Nosferatu, I
I'm not
just
watching that.
no, don't. I just, yeah, silent movies is not for everyone. I particularly because I am a. Oh, see, I'm going to go on a deep dive. I am a fan. Another guy who's going to be coming up on my scandal list is Rudolph Valentino. And he did, what was it, Night of the Sheik? And he was a, you know, the Mediterranean lover. And, you know, oh, he was a beauty. Valentino is being referenced in pop culture, even as up to American Horror Story. His story is being put in there. Like, and he died in, gosh, 25, 26, something like that. Like it's crazy. It's not
On
even that.
1925.
Oh yeah, not now. That would be crazy. But yeah, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. Silent, like I said, silent movies is not for everyone, but classic stories like this, classic movies like this, where you know it the production is it's basic. There's nothing. There's some beautiful shots in this movie, but it's nothing. Oh, that's so fancy. Oh, that's so, you know, CGI, practical effects, there's nothing like that. And it's just trying to tell you a really good story.
Yeah, I just think it's something to get used to, I think. That
100%.
style of film, that's
Yeah,
fine. I can do
100%.
it.
But I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I'm hoping the chat's enjoyed all of my interesting facts and that I got every single one of them out. Because as I've learned over the last few weeks, if I don't, it eats me up. And I have to just tell people them randomly. I hate having all this in my head because it only stays in there for a period of time before I'm then recording an episode of Monsters and I need all that information in there. Speaking of tomorrow, Monsters, new episode of Monsters drops. The episode will be going up on the Nerdy Up North YouTube channel Monday morning, and the audio for this episode, for today's episode and Monsters, will be going up on Monday tea time. Tomorrow for Monsters, we are going. I thought we were going to the 80s, technically the 90s, because it came out in 1990. We are doing Clive Barker's Nightbreed.
Nightbreed.
Not Stephen King, like I thought it was. If you watched last week's episode of Monsters, I generally thought this was King. Don't know why.
You know, got King in the brain from reading it, though.
I really do. Like, my t-shirt just,
Yeah.
my mum hates this t-shirt, by the way, because she expects something to be written on the back, like, based on on the novels by Stephen King. And she's like, well, what book is it? What's the novel? She doesn't like being confused by this t-shirt. Yeah, it's a chore. It's an absolute chore. It's come to the point now where I've had to map out what how many pages I need to read every day in order to be finished.
Oh, yeah,
And
that's
I've
a chore.
and I've got like little sections now set up in the book of like I have to read this by so it's 44 pages a day.
That's a second job, that sounds like it.
Second job. It's a nightmare. I've never been so like bowled over by a book before, but I'm so determined to do it. Like it's gonna be finished by the time the episode is done. Yes, the Nightbreed is based on the book Cabal, which is mentioned in tomorrow's episode. So tune in for that. What have you got going on this week, Christopher?
Top Grumps on Tuesday, and I talked to Paul because I'm sure we're wanting to release, me and Phoebe are releasing a new series thing. Is it a pod series? I don't know. Anime Club as well.
Oh, interesting.
Should be, hopefully.
Have you recorded
Hopefully.
them?
Yeah, it's recorded. I just need to do something about
Okay.
it. I've even got a class intro as well.
Want to give us a spoiler?
Yeah, it's really good.
Go on then. What is
No,
it?
that was a spoiler. It's really good.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, I'll send you it afterwards, man.
Oh, okay. Right, so Monsters tomorrow is Nightbreed. Top Grumps, have you announced who you're doing?
Tuesday. No, I think we've done it. Have we? I can't
Have you
remember.
announced to the people who your person is?
But
Do
Lee's
you
somewhere.
see you mentioned
Oh,
Top
no.
Grumps? Completely segue. Lee, can you just tell us? Do you have you announced to people who you are doing this week on Top Grumps? Because Chris doesn't have a fucking clue.
Krillin? Doing
Who?
Krillin, man.
Who's
From
that?
Dragon Ball Z. Baldy one.
You say it
Six
like I
dots on his
know.
head.
Oh, okay. I
No.
do actually. I know. I do now. You recorded it with Jake.
Yeah, we've done it. Oh, yeah, and Jake's on it on
Oh
Tuesday.
my
I'm damn
God.
crap at plugging stuff, man.
Put Lee, I'm so sorry. I tried to get him to like to promote it.
Just
Next
edit this
week.
out.
Oh, it's
We can, I didn't know this was live.
It's live, my friend. Every Sunday, live at 8 o'clock on the Nerdy Up North YouTube channel. Next week on Nerdy Up North, we are doing, I believe, Death Becomes Her, which I can't wait again to bore you all with all my facts and knowledge on that movie and all the makeup stuff. I cannot wait. We've got Lee and Phoebes joining us for that episode. Oh my gosh, Phoebes is debuting on the Nerdy Up North podcast. It's about time. Can't wait for that one. But if you are watching us on YouTube, thank you. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. If you are listening to us on audio, please like, comment, hearts. I don't know what else you do on there. Remember, all of our socials is Nerdy Up North. Or if you want to, go and find the Grumps, it's Top Grumps. Or if you want to find Monsters Up North, it's Monsters Up North. Like, you just have to search us and we're there.
Yeah, if you want to send something about the Top Grumps, I'll put Lee's address in the comments so you can send things by letter.
Exactly. Well, Chris, see us out.
Stay nerdy, everyone.
Wrong line. You best say it right. I can't say it, Chris. Say it.
Ah, same bad time, same bad place.
Same bad channel. Stay nerdy, everyone. Bye.
Bye.